Hey, did you know in Wisconsin, it's legal for children of any age to drink alcohol in a bar as long as they are with their legal guardian?
What?
So feel free to buy your six-year-old a margarita.
That can't be right.
You know, this is on Instagram. I'm not sure. I didn't do any file checking. Maybe it's fake news.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
Right. I mean, they wouldn't put that on Instagram if it wasn't real.
Wow.
I wonder if anybody is listening lives in Wisconsin.
We should throw that out. Definitely. Because we would have heard about this already.
Yeah. I mean, this includes Green Bay, right? Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Green Bay Packers. In Wisconsin, yeah. We would have heard some cheesehead kid getting drunk in the street.
Getting really, you know, wasted at a Green Bay game.
Right. And we would have heard stories about parent has to drag kid out by his hair.
I'm going to have to look up that. And if it's not true, I'm going to stop following that person on Instagram.
All right. We'll have to find that out. So, by the way, I hit record. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., and we are live with Mr. Matt Rainey. Matt, how are you, sir?
I am doing pretty well. How are you?
I am good. So apparently, Wisconsin's ranking as the nation's top binge drinking state was confirmed in a 2012 study by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So one of the loopholes cited prominently was a Wisconsin liquor law that creates an exception to the 21 drinking age. So you are right. It is the only state that allows parents or guardians to purchase alcohol for their children, regardless of whether that child is 7 or 20 years old, at bars and restaurants.
It's amazing.
So, wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
All right. Well, I'll keep following whoever that was on Instagram.
Okay. All right. So, Matt, we are back after a little bit of a break, and
I had a break, not you. Did you have a break? You were recording shows. I listened to them.
Man, I'm recording shows all the time. It's my second job now.
Does it pay as much as the first?
It pays absolutely nothing like the first. Did you hear the last show?
I did it with Steve and Mike.
Yeah, Mike Cherubino and me. Yep, I had a trip over to St. Petersburg for a client that's opening up a branch office there. And Mr. Cherubino lives in that area now, and Mr. Mike Smith was there on a break. So I gathered the boys together and said, let's have dinner and do a show.
Yeah, it was good. I think it's been a few months since I've talked to Steve, but yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right, it was good. It was
a personal show, right? Not tech.
Yeah, very little tech. Very little. Unlike tonight, because we got a lot of tech tonight. As a matter of fact, let me start with, I'm going to attempt to do story time. Because Mike Smith asked for more stories.
Stories are always nice.
But I'm not a good storyteller. But I will say this. So I have an ex-client. And when I say ex-client,
you don't mean like an extreme client.
No, this is like an old, former client. Yeah, it's like, get out of here. Don't call me again. We're broken up. That sort of thing. This is a client I've actually had. I got them in 2004. And I thought they were going to be a fantastic client because when I first got with them, they gave me a lot of referrals. They gave me business. It was a husband and wife that between them ran three businesses. So I got all three of their businesses. And then they were a entertainment company. So any place where they went to do entertainment, where they would set up, you know, sound stages, and they would I don't even know what the word is, but part of what they did was they provided manpower for events. So all the places you go to concerts and, you know, political stage events where they needed to set up stage sets and music and all of, they would provide the labor to those events. So I got a few jobs from there, including churches and other companies that needed tech support. So I thought they were going to be a fantastic company. They, by the way, were my customer that we had to go over to the Bahamas for them.
Oh, well, that is a good customer.
That was a great customer. They paid for my flight, my hotel, and they were, you know, willing to say, look, anytime your wife wants to go with you, oh, I hope she doesn't hear that.
I'm wondering why they're an ex-client, because it sounds like a pretty good client.
Well, they're
they need some work. You can give them my number.
Oh, they need some work, but you don't want to. You don't want this kind of work. So the bottom line is, a couple of years in, they turned into a slow pay, and it got a little slower and a little slower, and I would just literally have to put the hammer down and say, "Look, if you guys don't pay, I can't help you." And it would be at a time where they would need help, but they would be, you know, 2 months behind on an invoice. And I'm like, I need you to have a check waiting for me before I can assist you or before I can send somebody.
So it's just their business was drying up and
I don't know.
Come for them.
I don't know. We never had those great conversations because anytime I would try to talk to them, they were fine. Part of what the deal was is that the wife, who was in charge of the money, was basically stingy. She never wanted to pay for anything. So even the stuff that she acknowledged that they needed for their business, she didn't, you know, she would be the one that would always be like, well, can I get it cheaper? And I would have to say, you can, but not with me. So the bottom line is, this was back in the days when break fix, that's the type of client they were. And in 2013, I finally convinced them, look, if you want me to continue serving you, you need to be on one of my monthly service agreements. That's how the majority of my business clients are. We're going to set you up to where I can monitor your systems. I can provide centralized antivirus. I can put on web protection. I can do all those things because a lot of what their issues were, somebody got a virus, somebody downloaded something stupid, somebody got infected from, I mean, so it was all stuff where I'm like, this can be easily preventable. Just get on a plan. It's a regular, steady plan. You know what the amount is going to be every month or every year if you want to pay a year in advance, which they didn't. But so they did the bare minimum just to get me on. They did no backup.
Why are they not doing a backup?
They did not want to pay for backup. They thought.
Are they doing their own backups?
They were doing their own. They had a little NAS drive, which died a few years ago. And I was almost to the point where I was going to put one in just to have something.
Oh, I don't do that.
But that was my thing.
What I put in place? I put in place an email retention policy for myself that retains the email where I suggested it and they said no.
Yeah. So bottom line is they got behind again and I had to say, look, I need you guys to pay or we're done and I'm going to turn off all the services and, you know, you'll be on your own. Well, that happened in December of 2016.
So when you turn this off, they had outstanding invoices that mm-hmm. they never paid?
Correct.
And did they ever pay them?
No, because this is the type of client where it wasn't enough for me to send them to collections, which is something I would normally do. If they
weren't out too much.
It wasn't a lot. Okay. And I'm like, there are times where if they were a jerk of a client, if they were mean, if they were nasty, they were nice enough that I could allow them to be so slow pay if I wanted, but annoying enough that they weren't the customer I wanted to continue having.
And no more foreseeable trips to the Bahamas?
No more trips to the Bahamas.
Okay. That's a major dip.
I could go. I could pay my own way.
We want them to pay for it.
We want them to pay for it. So Monday afternoon, they call. Let me rephrase that. Monday morning, somebody calls and leaves a message. Hey, can you call us back? We have files that they have something named Rapid on them. That was the message. So I get another call. I'm at a client, I get a call, and I recognize the number, and I can't take the call right now. It's the wife, you know, of the business saying that they can't access any of their files, So I knew by that time they have ransomware. I call her back. She, you know, says, oh, the great Houdini is here. You can make our stuff come back. And I said, Houdini's dead. And I asked them, I said, so have you had anybody else come in the last year and set you up with backup or anything like that? And they're like, well, no, you're our guy. And I'm like, no,
they were aware that you terminated the relationship, right?
I said, I haven't been your guy.
Was it maybe murky or unclear?
Oh, I'm sure it was in a hopeful state that I would hear their pleas and come and rescue them. But all I could tell them was, you don't have any external backups. So I will take a look at your server and see if the internals are still there. But if they're not, you're out of luck. You're going to have to contact the company and see what the ransom is and pay it back to get your files.
Okay, so, I mean, maybe you did this and you didn't say, but what I would have said was, I'd be happy to take a look at it. Let's just settle up all the past due invoices, and then we can move forward. Of course, I need advance payment for this, but then we can move forward.
I thought about that, but there comes a point in time where I'm like, I don't want to deal with it.
And but see, you don't have to deal with it, because if they say, we're not going to pay those past due invoices, then you say, okay, well, you know.
I can't help you.
Can't help you.
So that was interesting, and it was something
so did
where.
Did you do anything?
No, I didn't do a thing. So either way, I wasn't going to do anything because I knew they weren't going to pay. Because here's the thing. I knew I was going to have to tell them to pay the ransom. So I figured they're going to choose. They're going to choose to pay me or pay the ransom. And I figured I'd let them pay the ransom for the chance of getting their files back.
Yeah. But. See, I probably would have said I can take a look. I just need to clear up the past invoices plus a fee to cover my coming to look. And then in the end, tell them, or if there was no backup, tell them, yeah, pay the ransom.
Yeah, but it wasn't a lot. So at that point, I was like, I'm being nice enough just to call.
I'm sure they appreciated the callback.
I'm sure they did.
That was 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So nothing since.
I've heard nothing since, no.
Did you happen to say how much the ransom was?
No. Well, here's the thing. Of course, you know, most of the customers are like, well, you know, so I'm trying to look in my dashboard because I still have them in asset tracking. I just have no checks turned on and stuff. Because, you know, the message that I got was, well, none of the workstations are affected. It's only the server. And I had to say, well, there's probably a workstation infected somewhere. It's just something that, you know, because they've got like 6-7 workstations there. But there was only 2 people working that day. So I said, you have to go check the other stations. There's probably a warning. There's probably a warning.
Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. On one of the stations that the files are encrypted, there should be a warning. There should be a file somewhere. And I told him, I said, look in the network drive where all the encrypted files are. There should be a text file that says, hey, your files are encrypted, you know, contact this or send an email here. And they found that, so that was where I left them.
Well, I can tell you what, you did more than I would have done, because I wouldn't have done anything without payment first for past due. Even if it wasn't much, it's more the principle.
Yes.
I would have said, let's just clear it up, and then we can go forward.
Yep.
But so. Some people are just nicer than others. You're just a nice guy.
Well, they may call me back. And I still have the option of saying, you know, we have this outstanding debt.
Yeah, if they call you back, I personally would say it.
They're
going to act surprised. Are you sure? I could have swore we paid all that.
I'll be like, here they are. Let me refer to this email that was sent on this date.
They can say, you know what? We had a receipt, but it was encrypted.
Then they can. And then I'll say, well, all my new customers now, I have to treat you like a new customer, and there's an onboarding fee.
Yeah, so you could make them pay the past two invoices and then say, now this is my current setup, so you have to do this. I'm going to need advance payment, onboarding. Here's my new rate, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah.
Yep.
Then they might have another thing to call you besides Houdini after that.
Yeah, they'll call me something, all right. So that was a fun Monday.
It just seems to so many clients, and I don't get a lot of them, but so many clients want to save a dollar here, $20 here, and the positions they get themselves in are quite ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you get tired of trying to tell them all the potential issues they could have, you know. And I just was telling somebody the other day, you know, if your computer is connected to the internet, you're at risk. Period. Every, you know, 90% of what you do is based on going to the internet, to go to websites, log into portals, your email. So if your computer is connected to the internet, you need protection. You know, it's the same thing you tell your kid, you know, when they turn 16 and get that driver's license. You know what? You need to have insurance. You need to have, you know, if they're going on a date, you know,
insurance.
You need to have protection. It was a bad analogy.
I'm getting flashbacks of drinking in Wisconsin now with these young kids doing things they shouldn't be doing. So, yeah, and I had clients, just two or three clients this past week that want to go buy their own computers at whatever local store, and they one of them called me on the way to whatever store she was going to buy a computer. Did I tell you this? I lose track of what I mentioned. Time, like, has no meaning.
Well, the problem is that story can happen almost every week.
Well, okay. She's on her way. She goes, which one should I get at the store? And I said, none of them. Well, no, whatever you need me to get, I'll get. I said, well, I can't advise you to get any of those. Those don't work on your network.
Right.
They're going to all have Windows 10 home.
Mm-hmm.
So I convinced her to let me give her a quote. And it was Windows 10 Pro. And she goes, oh, no, we want Windows 7. I said, then what were you going to that store for if you need Windows 7? They're not going to have Windows 7 there.
Nope.
It's just crazy. Two or three customers, one of them brought one to me yesterday. No, I didn't bring it to me. They bought it somewhere else, and they needed it set up for the office. And I said, well, first of all, this is a piece of junk. It's got, you know, the wrong version of Windows.
Such a technical term, junk.
Well, yeah, I don't want to confuse them with technical term specs, but I say, this thing's a piece of junk. And I tell them that. So this isn't going to work the way you want it to work. It's going to be slow. I said, how much was this computer? I'm like, $300. I'm like, do you really think a $300 computer is going to be a good computer? So she says, well, this is what we're going to use. I said, okay, can you bring it to me? Oh, no, can you come get it? Yeah, I can come get it. So here's what happens. They saved a little bit of money by getting the cheap computer. I have to go pick up the computer, not meet one of my techs. That's an hour minimum to go over there and pick it up, bring it back. Then I've got to get rid of all the junk that comes with these cheap computers, right?
Yep.
So I got to clean it up, get rid of all that stuff, do all the updates, install the software. You know, I charged them 2 hours to get it cleaned up and update the drivers and BIOS and everything. And then an hour to drop it off. So I billed them 4 hours of labor to get their junky computer to halfway work on the network because they didn't want to pay to upgrade the OS.
Right.
So I got to just map the network drive as the user, as the domain user account. But they end up spending as much as they would on a normal computer on this computer.
That happens all the time. I have a customer where they've got a junior tech in-house where when we sell them computers, we do all the prep work here.
Right.
And then ship it to them.
And we charge, when somebody buys a computer from us, we charge them 1 hour prep. That's to install any software they bought from us, do all the updates, BIOS, Windows.
And that's being generous.
Yeah, and that's being generous. If for somebody who buys one somewhere else, I charge them more because it's a convenience to buy it from us.
Right.
Yeah. And we do that for only an hour.
Yep, and then the tech, you know, complains because when we first shipped the computers to them and he had to do all the setup and stuff, he's like, oh, this takes forever. I'm like, well, yeah. Because what they did was they wanted to save money because we had our prep fee on there. Because I've got a fee that says prep and ship, and it's whatever, I think it was $275 at the time or whatever. And they were like, well, we can save that money and have our guy do it. Well, then it would take him, you know, a day to get a new computer set up. And what's even worse is I would charge them for the prep. And anytime the computer was new for an existing user, I would charge them a transfer fee to transfer all the files and settings from the old computer to the new computer. Which, for most techs, they understand if you're using something like FABS or if you're using a profile transfer program, and you're bringing over, you know, desktop, My Documents, pictures, email in Outlook with the settings, including the, you know, history cache and all that stuff, the desktop background. That is invaluable for a user to go to a new computer and see all their stuff, see their familiar background, and know that all their stuff works. Well, this tech didn't do that. You know, he would copy over favorites, documents, and stuff, and then that's it. And if he set up the computer at the beginning of the day, and he goes to set up their email, they've got to download all that mail and take up bandwidth, whereas the way I do it, all that comes over, they don't take up bandwidth, and they have all their stuff. And so they were complaining about all that cost, but then when he realized how long it took him to do the process, and it was basically a full day. And I'm like, so that $275 doesn't sound so bad now, does it?
Yeah, sometimes when clients get a computer and have to connect to it remotely, do all the prep work, and they see how long it takes because I have to stay connected forever. And I tell them, look, I'm not going to sit here and watch this computer. So it might be done with this update, but I'm not going to click reboot or next immediately. Unless you want to pay me the entire time to sit here and stare at this computer, I'm going to do it like I do it if it's on my bench. I'm going to do it between other things. And it's going to take a while. And they always say, this is taking like a whole day. You're not going to charge for all this, are you? And I say, well, not all of it. But yes, you will get charged.
Yep.
And that's why they say, when they order a computer from me, and they say, when's it going to come in? I said, well, delivery shows end of day, you know, Tuesday. Well, I can come pick it up Tuesday afternoon? No, we've got prep work to do to it to get it ready for the use. And then, you know, they don't get it.
No.
You know, back to buying the cheap computers, I had to ask somebody, because she bought the one who bought this cheap computer that I said was junk, that she spent $300. I said, you bought a car in your life before, right? She said, yeah. I said, if you went to a car lot and said, you don't just say, give me a new car. If the salesman said, here's a new car and it's $1,000, you might ask why a new car is only $1,000 when most cars are much more than that. You should have the same question when you get a new computer for $200 or $300. There's a reason that is cheaper. You wouldn't buy a new car for $1,000, would you?
Right. Because the question would be, is the engine in there?
Yeah. What's wrong with it?
Same thing.
They don't equate that. And she says, well, I guess that makes sense. I never really thought. I thought a computer is a computer. I said, no, it's not like a toaster. Right. There's reasons, just like cars are different prices. Houses are different prices. It's a reason computers are different prices. Yep.
So speaking of new again, we're diverting. We're not anywhere on our plan for tonight. So I got some new computers to set up for a client. I'm doing 3 Windows 10.
Is this new for you?
No, but I just thought you would just find it interesting.
I still do some Windows 7. In fact, I did a Windows 7 30. I did 2 Windows 7 32 bits yesterday. Ugh.
I still have, actually, I got to order 5, at least 5 Windows 7s still. But here's the question I had for you. So I went and set the first computer up, got it all set up, and literally it popped up with a warning saying, as of April 18th, your version of Windows will no longer be supported. Please update now. Have you had that happen?
That build number of Windows 10.
I mean, is that ridiculous? It was a brand new computer.
Yeah, it might have been sitting on the shelf for 6 months.
And they're already saying your version of Windows will no longer be supported. I'm like, it's Windows 10. Isn't this the last Windows you'll ever need?
Not that build.
And at least they're being good, because when they, you know, give you the estimated time for the backup, they're like, this may take 3 to 6 hours or whatever the number was. And it did take a while. It was, so my first thought was, my goodness, imagine a new user on site setting up a computer and then getting this after you've done all the setup stuff. I mean, oh my goodness gracious.
Everything's fully prepped before he goes out of our office. I can't afford having the tech sit out there.
No.
To do those.
So I'm glad I did that here. So I got the first one all done, let that update go. It took me a day to set up the first 10, and then I cloned the machine to the other 2 stations.
Did you sys prep it first? Because Windows 10 sys prep is so easy now.
Actually, no. I haven't sys prepped in a while. I probably should have looked at that.
Windows XP sys prep was...
XP sys prep was awesome. That was the bomb.
Okay, but Windows 10 is almost like Windows XP.
Really?
Yes, it's very easy to run. It's very easy. I didn't like the way, I think, Windows 7, Windows 8 did it. But Windows 10 sys prep is back to normal, easy sys prep.
Nope, didn't sys prep. Because I don't really install the full... I mean, I get the Windows up, I do the updates, and I load up my, you know, my freeware crap.
Beware.
And then I'll beware. And then I'll load over, you know, ISO images of Office and stuff like that. So then when I get it on site, we can, you know, add it to the domain and then install all their stuff.
So you don't install Office until you join the domain?
Nah, it depends. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. On this client, I won't. Oh, because I want to bill them for this is a time and materials on site customer.
If they bought Office, I'll install Office as part of my 1 hour prep.
The reason I don't is because it's Office 2016 and you have to attach it to a account. So I make them give me an account to attach it to.
We usually, we create a generic under the administrator account, and we have that. So I just log either like a software account or an administrator account.
Yeah. I'll do that for some. I do that for some, but not for this one. This one, I make them give me an account. So even if we set up a new generic one, I want them to pay for my time to do that.
But I don't do much OEM lately. I mean, a lot of it's volume licensing, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I love volume licensing.
Yeah, very nice. I get kind of annoyed when I get an OEM when I'm like, oh, I have one today. But... you know, we already had the generic Microsoft account, so not that big of a deal.
Yep.
You know what I hate with the OEM stuff? If you have, let's say a client buys 3 of them in a day, or I'm prepping 3 one day.
Right.
I hate it when you go install the first one, right, and you click, you get the little, for computer installed on whatever, hit install.
Mm-hmm.
The second one that you go do, now you have two the same date.
Oh, and you don't know which one is which unless you already know the product key and all that.
Okay, because I think I figured out how they do it, though.
Okay.
The first one is, of course, if you do one, it's just one listed.
Right.
If you go to the second one, it actually puts it underneath. So if you have three in one day, the first one is at the top, the second one's in the middle, third one's at the bottom for that date, is what I think happens. Even though it brings you to the top, like the third one, you'll have two.
Right.
Even though it brings you to the top one to click install, it's not. It's the third one with that date, is what I think I found out. And I figured this out because I would click the top one, and it would say it's already been activated. So eventually I figured out, I think, that it just adds them to the bottom. So the first one to the top, second one, the next date is the second one, the same date on the third. You know, does that make sense?
It does, but you know what? I just open up to view the product key, and then that's how I figure out which one I'm...
But the product key doesn't match the card, though.
Sure does.
I don't think so. I think it's a different product key.
No, every time I've gone in to do the 2016 Home of Business, because you know what you do is you go, instead of going to the office.com/myaccount, you go to office.com/setup,
yeah,
and you have to put in the key.
You log in, then you put the key in.
And put the key in, and then as soon as that happens, that's when you do. But here's the thing, I don't even use their install from the website anymore. I've downloaded the software to my USB drive, and I'll install from the USB drive.
But I'm pretty sure that the installer online is the latest version with the updates, right? If you have an installer, you got to go then run updates to get the latest.
I don't know. You know what? This is easier and faster for me, so.
I just like not doing OEM as much as possible.
That would be the best thing to do, but.
And a word of warning with the generic, we do the generic accounts. You hit a limit with those, and you can't do any more.
So I saw a post in a group the other day. There's still debate over the actual number because for a long time we thought it was 10. And somebody the other day tried to say, no, it's 30.
Yeah, I think it is 30 because I actually had to call Microsoft. And I think they told me 30.
Okay.
Because it took me a while to get to it for one client. But normally now if I'm going to know I'm going to get more than 10 from a client, we just tell them you got to do volume licensing.
You know, I usually say 5.
5 is a good number, but a lot of them didn't want to spend, they call it the extra money.
Right.
And I say, well, it's not really extra because this license gives you additional things OEM licensing doesn't give you. So, plus, it's not tied to the machine. If your machine dies, you can load it here. I mean, there's lots of things you get for that price. Again, they're comparing office license to office license, not really why one costs more than the other.
Right. Well, a computer's just a computer, right?
Yeah. Just put whatever office.
Office is office, right?
Doesn't that come with the computer?
Oh, remember though. You know what? I don't ever remember office coming with the computer except for... What was that one product called where you got the...
Works.
No, not Works. Yeah, that's true. That did come with it. But there was that I almost said weenie version. That Office where it was just the basic Word in Excel. And it was 2010.
The starter edition?
Yeah, starter edition, yeah. That was the only time it actually came with.
One time somebody said, doesn't it come with it? I said, yeah, click on start. Type in Notepad. But that's not Word. No, this is what comes with. It's a word processor. It's just it's a little bit lighter in features.
Yeah. Well, the sad part is they see it on the desktop, you know, because they click the start button and there's, you know, Microsoft Office is there and they think that it's there. And I'm like, well, yeah, go ahead and click on it. Oh, I got to buy it. It's extra. Yeah. Think of it as an app. The
sneakiness.
Think of it as an in-app purchase.
I have a question. I've never looked into this. This is totally off topic.
Okay. Like we've not been on topic all night.
Maybe roll. So, okay. Do you know how when you log into whatever account on Windows 10, right?
All right.
It puts all those stupid things, bubble, whatever, all those stupid little games.
Oh, yeah.
And if you uninstall them, the next user you log into, they're all right back.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to uninstall it? That I'm sure it's some group policy or something. I haven't bothered looking. Have you come across anything to just stop that no matter who logs in?
Actually, I've not, but that was one of the things that I wanted to look at in doing a master image of a Windows 10 station to either wipe that out or, like you said, group policy the heck out of it. So
that's really annoying.
Well, it's the same thing with every setting, all the taskbar settings, all the Cortana settings.
Well, default Adobe Acrobat Reader. You can set it as default for one user, but it's not unless you go open it and set it as default for somebody else.
Right. I'm sure, you know what? Nobody, you know what? Let me check email real quick, because I don't think anybody sent in Windows 10 tips like we asked.
Because nobody's using it.
So
I found it looks like it could be a group policy setting here that we could set.
Oh, beautiful. So here's the thing. And here's why somebody's probably going to send an email going, why are you asking for tips? Why don't you just look it up yourself? Well, you know what? I don't have time.
I just looked it up and now I'm happy that I did. So
there you go.
Apparently you can do group policy or you can do a registry edit.
Now, did you look up for the games or for the other stuff?
This is for the games.
Okay.
So this person says to go to HK Local Machine Software Policies, Microsoft Windows Cloud Content. Okay. In here, create a new 32-bit D word value named Disable Windows Consumer Features. And set its value data to 1. And that will prevent the cloud content from installing.
Oh, you can block the central store. You can block all the apps. Apps, games, and media. Oh, this is for children. You can do content restrictions.
Well, okay, so I consider users children as well, so.
Yeah.
Update, the trick described in this article does not work in Windows 10 anniversary update.
Oh, they broke it again. All right, so
for Windows 10 anniversary update, see this workaround. Oh, this says install Windows 7. No. Okay, so Windows anniversary update and later you've got to do a local security, go into the local security policy and
okay, but that's local security. I don't want to have to go into each
well,
and
you can have the same thing on domain group policy as well. Wow. Well, yeah, you might have to have some kind of add in the group policy to make this work. It's a lot harder. There's a lot more steps inside this. So we'll have to revisit this. I'll have to test something.
All right.
It's going in the group policy. And it's telling you a new application control package rules.
All right. So here's my promise to you. I will go online and Google some of these Windows 10 things and see what I can come up with. You're going to do your research there. Users, people out there listening, if you already have gone through our struggles and have some policies in place for not only setting up Windows 10, making it easier for your users to use, but some of these things of, you know, settings and group policy to block games. And more importantly, for us that set up computers in domains all the time, you know, how do you block settings from transferring to a new user when you're setting them up? You know, if you set up a default profile, like, you know, you can with power settings, you know, that transfers from user to user? Why can't things like blocking games and the taskbar settings and all that stuff transfer from user to user? Would you just...
Microsoft really wants you to have Candy Crush.
No.
Is it Bubble Witch or whatever the stupid things are?
I have never played Candy Crush, so I have no idea what you just said. But you know what? Would you say Bubble Witch?
Is there some kind of bubble thing? There's some kind of bubble. I don't even look at him. I just see it and right and click on install.
Okay, but you have kids, so you probably have seen it.
Okay, there's no Windows 10 in this house.
Okay, you don't need Windows 10 to play Candy Crush. Do you?
I don't think they play Windows. I have to ask him, but I don't think.
I thought Candy Crush was an app.
I guess it is an app, but I don't think my kids play that.
Oh my goodness gracious, Candy Crush. We are Googling the heck. Oh, I can't even spell Candy Crush. Oh, it's a. There's not just one game. There's a whole. It's. Oh my goodness! What
is
that?
Of course it is.
What is the highest level of Candy Crush? How do you beat level 149? 149 levels. Okay, Candy Crush Saga is a free-to-play match 3 puzzle video game release. Okay, just that alone. That doesn't sound enticing to me.
I don't play any games of any kind.
I don't have time. Oh, here's a Candy Crush Soda Saga.
I've seen, okay, that's one that I've seen on Windows 10, I think.
The soda one? Is that the, what's the one with the commercial where they're busting lollipops and stuff?
I don't watch commercials. Fast forward through, everything I watch is recorded and I fast forward all that.
Mm.
Hey, look, live question. Live question.
What? We don't have a chat.
No, I got a text.
Oh.
What's the best spyware removal free software?
Spyware removal? When was the last time you had a spyware removal? Spybot?
Well, I'm going to tell this person Malwarebytes.
The Malwarebytes tool set.
He's not a technician.
Oh, well. Then just regular Malwarebytes.
Yep.
Have you been using the toolbox?
Yes.
I like it.
I like it. My techs are getting used to it because they're used to loading Malwarebytes, but then they leave it on the computer. And when they don't buy it, they just get annoyed with the pop-ups. And I said, look, if you're going to install that and they don't buy it, you need to uninstall it. But now I said, use a tool set. If they don't want to buy it, then don't even put it on. Just do the tool set and then delete it when you're done.
Yep, I used the tool set yesterday, as a matter of fact, to just pushed over the files and did the scan utility and diagnosed two failed hard drives. Well, not failed, but two hard drives going bad, and told the tech on site, pack them up, ship them here. I'll get them replaced.
So, on a different tech note, I have seen twice in the past 2 weeks servers getting full on their C drive. Now, one thing has always been, these are small business servers. I think a lot of people are familiar with the inetpub logs filling up.
I know those well.
But what I've been seeing lately is not the inetpub logs filling up. It's the cert log folder. So this folder's under Windows System 32 cert log.
Huh.
And I saw one was 40 gigabytes and one was 60 gigabytes.
And that was filling up the server? What are they, 200 gig partitions?
Well, that was, you know, it's free size free. That was a lot of it.
Okay.
So that was one way to clear up a lot of space pretty quickly. With the INET pub logs, I would just delete those.
Correct.
With the cert log folder, there's actually a little utility you got to run. And It only takes the bigger one, the 60 gig one. I ran this utility and it took like 30 seconds. Cleared the folder down to, you know, a few bytes. And it's not hard. You just go into a command prompt, and I'm not going to say, do we want to put it in the show note instead? We don't want to.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show note. So give me the link.
Well, it's not a link.
It's not a link.
It's some notes I typed up.
Send me the notes. I'll find it. I'll figure out a way to do it.
That's a good man. So yeah, this is a good thing to run. Doesn't take long.
Is it a PowerShell command?
No, just a regular command prompt. For those who are curious, it's the certutil utility.
And that notification was the email from Mr. Matt Rainey.
And of course, a lot of stuff in addition, you gotta load that stupid desktop experience where you can clear all the other stuff out, right? But the desktop experience is not going to clear out the certutil folder or
now,
the cert log folder.
Did it also give you instructions on disabling those logs? I mean, are those logs that you need?
It did not. It just told me how to truncate the log files. But again, these are servers that have been in service for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. It's not something you're going to have to run very often.
Right. That is true, because even with the IIS logs, I think on a couple of the SPS servers, I would turn them off. But I think if you were using like SharePoint or something, you really couldn't turn them off. So you had to periodically run delete the files.
Yeah. So, and you could actually just create a little script on the desktop and run it once in a while if you wanted to. But this utility helps. Because you can't just delete those. Well, I think I tried to delete it and I couldn't delete it. It gave me some kind of error, and that's when I found this utility. So,
all right.
It's a quick little tip.
There you go. Tip of the week, folks. You know what? Since we just did a tip of the week, let's do an email of the week.
We have a stack?
We have a stack of mail. Let me pick one out here.
You get the hopper, you get to twirl the hopper around and reach in and pick out one.
I'm shuffling the papers now. this is actually, let's see. Oh, who are we going to pick? Dante. We'll pick an email from Dante. This email, this is from a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wait, hold on. I know Dante.
Yes.
Guess what?
What?
I think Dante is in Wisconsin.
Get out. Dante, if you are listening, you know what? I'm going to reply to Dante and tell him if he's in Wisconsin. Well, first, what do we want to say? Do we want to ask him if he has children and if he gives them beer in the bar? yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I hope we didn't. Yeah, he's in Wisconsin, but we won't say where.
No.
Yeah.
Look, somebody right away, somebody who can. I wonder if he knows about this.
I don't know. But isn't it amazing how this show comes together and everything is just one in the universe? So, all right. So let me make a note here when I reply to his email. Do you serve your kids beer?
Or is it common? Like if you're in a restaurant, do you see 10-year-olds drinking, you know, a nice Long Island iced tea or a
beer in a bar. Here's my only other question is, do they have drinking problems in Wisconsin? I mean, because that's the thing. Well, who would take their kid to a bar to drink unless they're, you know, of age to know better? I'm not taking my 12-year-old kid to a bar to drink beer.
Well, you know, different people. Maybe they're hard workers, and after a long day, they need a nice cold one.
Well, you know, hey, I've never been to Wisconsin. I probably never will be from Wisconsin. It's too cold up there, so
I would like to go to Wisconsin. I'd love to go to a Green Bay Packer game.
I don't think that's going to happen. Do you have any relatives in Wisconsin?
No.
Yeah. Isn't that waiting list like three generations long or something?
I'm sure I could find something on StubHub or something. All right. So that was another sidetrack.
Okay. Dante in Wisconsin. He writes, a longtime listener here. You've made reference several times in the show about doing proactive tasks for remote desktop servers. Would you be willing to share the tasks that you perform regularly on an RDS to help keep them running smoothly? Thought this would also be a good topic to bring up on your show. Thanks again. All right. So let me ask, because I still have, I don't know, maybe about 10 remote servers that I manage. How about you?
We still have a few. It's hard to count exactly how many.
And are you doing maintenance regularly on those stations? I mean, besides the updates and the protection and all that stuff.
No, and I'm looking for a utility. I know there used to be a utility we had to run on one that would go through and clean out profiles, like temp files and profiles, because this particular user used them as their desktops, right? Normally we have a remote desktop server and they're for specific use.
Right.
For an application. They're not supposed to get on it and browse the web and do whatever you do on a normal desktop. We told them only use this for your program. But this customer was different. So normally we don't have to do too much maintenance other than the updates and, you know, the reboots. And normally we'll probably do once a week reboot.
Okay. So for, I think Dante's referring to, I've made references to the fact that I have branch offices for several of my law firms where that's what they have to do. That's, you know, an entire office or more will work remotely. So for instance, you know, if the main office is here in Fort Lauderdale, but they've got an office up in Vero Beach or in Tampa, that entire office will work remotely. So they're, you know, those users, that is their desktop, like you mentioned earlier. So in those cases, the proactive tasks that I do are simply just cleanup tasks where I will, using the SolarWinds utility, I set up a task that will clean all the temp files for the users. We will basically have the server check for updates and restart every night. So those are basically the three things that we always do. Now there's some others that I may do for, you know, one particular client or not, where most of the temp files we clean up are just the user temporary internet files. And then for others, we'll actually clean out the system files and do that stuff. So I remember the utility that I used to use a separate utility that would clean temp files for users, and it wouldn't work if a user was logged on, so it would just skip that profile.
Right, I remember that.
Basically, I think it was TFC, Temp File Cleaner. And I'll look and see if I don't think I have it anymore, but that, I think that's what it was.
Schedule a reboot and then run utility.
TFC, right.
When you say, everybody get out by this time, and of course, you see like 8 disconnected users.
Yeah.
That you're not out.
Well, it's funny. There would be a lot. I would have attorneys scream because we set the utilities and the backups and all that stuff. Oh, we would do the virus scan on, because they were used as regular desktops. We would basically run a full virus scan each night. So clean the temp files, run the virus scan, check for updates, reboot. But the attorneys, you know, they try to work all the time. So I would have attorneys that would be up 1, 2, 3 in the morning trying to work. And I'm like, no, you have to stop at some point, you know, because I've got to do maintenance on the server.
So why were they using this as a remote? They couldn't run anything locally? Was there a specific software package that was on their remote desktop server?
Well, most of the time is they have a case management system that is either SQL based or whatever. The they would only work if they could, you know, replicate data between the offices with a server. So if a company wasn't willing to put a server in the remote office, they had to do terminal services. So one of my customers, it did work out great because we could run the case management over the VPN and then cache files locally and stuff like that. But most of them could not work that way. They had to connect back to a desktop local to the domain, which is why they used the RDS and the terminal service for that.
So speaking of remote access, I'm sure you get a lot of calls, just like I get, customers wanting remote access to their office. Well, both to their office or to their office computer, right? I'm sure you get that a lot.
I do, but most of them have the remote servers already. So I just, direct them to the remote server. And the ones,
if they're at their house, do you have them connect over VPN?
Well, most of them, because clients are cheap. So some of them don't. Now, I do have a customer where we are going to be implementing two-factor authentication and probably either using the Duo app or something else where they at least will have two-factor authentication. And I've got another customer where I finally convinced them to utilize the SonicWall SSL VPN.
Yeah, they got to use that VPN. I guarantee if you look in logs and you leave open RDP to a public IP, they're getting hammered with login attempts.
Yeah. So you asked this for a reason.
Yeah. So I just wanted to see what people are using. I mean, I can tell you what we're using. I mean, I hear on different podcasts, RDP getting a really bad rap. People say, don't use RDP. Don't use RDP. My opinion is nothing wrong with RDP as long as it's secured.
Right.
You can't have RDP open to the public. I mean, everyone is doing RDP. There are no ports open on the router, the firewall. So if you do a scan, you're not getting anything. Everyone connects VPN and then RDPs to a private IP.
Right.
Now, sometimes, let's say a client says the accountant needs to connect to my computer to run my QuickBooks on my computer. Okay, that I normally won't do VPN, but only if the accountant has a static IP at their office. So if the accountant has a static IP, I say, okay, allow remote access from this IP.
Right.
It's not from anyone. I mean, And I tell them this means that anyone at that office can connect to your network. Is that okay? And if it's not, we'll do a VPN. They say that's fine because Susie may connect or Jill may connect. That way I don't have to have more VPNs on all the computers.
Right.
But everything is set with VPN or by IP. And that's what we do for remote access. Now, sometimes clients don't have, because you have that Windows professional. So if Mary wants to connect to her computer at the office and she has Windows 7 home, she obviously can't connect to that, right? It's not going to support RDP. And when I have a client that does that, that's a little different. Now, you know, the dashboard, if you have the agent with SolarWinds, you can do sub-accounts or delegate. You can have clients access their own computers.
Right. I've done that with one person.
Yes. So some dashboards, I know Instant House Call has it as long as you have the most expensive plan for Instant House Call. Some dashboards have it. I'm not a big fan of those because depending on what you have in the dashboard, what's this check? What does this mean? They look where they shouldn't be looking.
Right. And with SolarWinds, now you can actually, disable access to stuff so that if they go to click on it, nothing happens. But it's still there. They can still see.
Still gonna get it. It still generates questions.
Right.
Because the people that we had that set up for, some of the stuff they ask, I'm like, what are you doing looking around? You're supposed to use this to hit take control. That's all you're supposed to do with it. Don't try this and don't try that. So I ended up actually log me in pro. It used to be free, right?
It used to be. Many, many moons ago.
Now, of course, they charge for it. And I think it's $350 a year. But.
Wait, what?
Log me in pro, $350 a year.
Oh, see, I do the log me in central. And then I'll create sub accounts or groups for that particular company. Now that's a lot more than $350.
Yeah, right. So you're paying for that.
And then I build.
And you're charging them a fee to, yeah. So, I mean, it's about $29 a month if you do Log Me In Pro, which isn't that bad. I hear a lot of people complaining that Log Me In Pro is so expensive. And I hear people say that they'll do a sub account or they'll do a SolarWinds and they'll charge a customer like $20 a month. I'm like, okay, but you're not that much cheaper than just having a Log Me In pro account. Plus, I don't think that Take Control, I've never looked at this, but I don't think Take Control in the SolarWinds dashboard allows for things like remote printing and things like that, right? You can take control, but I don't think you can print.
I've never even tried.
And the way that it does multiple monitors, I don't like it.
Oh, they need to fix that.
Well, that's the thing they're not going to. I don't think they can. So if something like LogMeIn Pro or even RDP will allow for remote printing, allows for multiple monitors.
Yep.
Because RDP, if you use RDP, you can splitview.com. Have you ever heard of splitview.com?
I have, but I've never had to use it because...
Works well.
Okay.
Works really good. So I have a lot of clients who have multiple monitors at the office and multiple monitors at their house, and they want the same experience over RDP. I mean, that works well. The log me in, but the multiple monitor on the dashboard is terrible. I don't think it does remote printing. So there's a lot of things when a client asks me, hey, I want to access remotely. What should I use? Of course, you got to ask them a ton of questions about how they want to use it, right? Now, some clients don't have a computer to connect to. They have a notebook, and they want to access the network when they're out of the office. There's no terminal server. There's no desktop to connect to.
Right.
What are you going to do? So, mobile VPN, map a network drive.
So are you actually doing that with some people, mobile VPN?
Yeah. Now, I show them how to connect. I actually create a little script for them. Say, click on this. It's going to pop up asking for your password. Type your password in. So, well, I'll tell you this. Sometimes I say, do you want to type the password in or do you want me to save the password in the script? Some want to save the password in the script. And I say, this is in plain text. If somebody digs around on your computer, they will see your password. I said, I'm not going to do this unless you've got a password on your computer. And they say, well, I have a password on my computer. Okay, fine. If you want to save the password in the script, I'll do it. Or we can have it pop up asking for your password. So I actually have that a lot of places. Mobile VPN, map a network drive. And I explained to them, this is not going to be fast. If you open an Excel spreadsheet when you're in the office on the network drive, you expect it to open in a certain speed, right? You open that same Excel spreadsheet when you're on an internet connection, it will not open as quick. Do not call me and tell me that your Excel spreadsheet is opening slow. I'm telling you, it's going to open slower.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's what we do. Now, with the VPN, and the map network drives. It's actually nice because IP printers will work. They're out of the office. Mm-hmm. And they want to print to the office. The printer's going to work the same, right? They hit print. It prints across the VPN to the IP. That's nice. But a lot of the people who we do remote access for want to print. So some things aren't just going to work. I mean, the dashboard's not going to work.
Right. Well, actually, while you were talking, I looked it up. The take control does allow remote printing.
So do you have to do some kind of setting to enable it?
Well, you can enable it. Yeah, you just, when you click on the interactions, what they call it, you enable remote printing, and then you can set your local default printer.
Okay. So even if that works, the multiple monitor thing is terrible.
Right.
That rules out the SolarWinds dashboard. Take control from me for any remote client that has multiple monitors. Right. That's just terrible. And like I said, I don't know about you, but most of my clients have at least two monitors.
We are at that point in our lives where everybody wants at least two.
Yeah. So
and two big ones.
Yeah, right. Right. Because one big one is not the same as two big ones. Because they say, I want the biggest you can get. But they're still not happy with it, right? Because the way it maximizes and the way it does this.
Right. Yeah, and then they want to change the font and, well, this doesn't look right. And
I just hear a lot, so many people, I wanted to mention it because so many people say you can't use RDP. You can't use RDP. And every time I hear that, I'm like, yes, of course you can use RDP.
The best way to describe it is to say you can't use RDP naked.
Right.
Just like we said earlier, you've got to have protection.
You got to. You can't leave your RDP hanging out in the breeze.
Right. So what's funny is a customer I was setting up this morning, still a small business server on site. So we're using the remote web workplace for them. So they go into the portal and then connect over to whatever desktop they're allowed. And so we do that. But yeah, most of them, the RDP and for the most of the law firms that we do, you know, it's the SSL VPN tunnel between the offices. So that's what we do. And there's only a few attorneys that will demand to work from home, and which is why we're going to implement some other stuff. And the one client I've actually said, if you're going to do that in order to be compliant, because that's the big thing where, you know, they all want to be compliant and they're all signing agreements with, you know, their clients that they're protecting their data. So now I can just come right back at them and say, well, in order to protect your agreement with your client, you have to have some sort of protection. So the SSL VPN is mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we open up any ports on the router that are from any external to something internal. Even email, if people are hosting on-site Exchange servers, we don't do from any external to the mail server. We have it go through our spam filter. And even that policy only allows inbound from our mail server.
Right.
We don't have anything, and I can't really think of any reason why you'd want to have any port open from, unless you're hosting a public web server, but.
Who does that anymore? Actually, you know what?
I used to have a client that had hosted their own website.
I should probably have thought before I said that, because I'm sure somebody, there's probably 20% of our listeners are guys, I host my own.
I would not want to do that. I'm not a web guy. I think web hosting is pretty cheap.
Well, it's cheap, and you know what? There's so many attacks now on websites that, think of all the extra protection you've got to put in place for a local network if you're going to host a public website. I mean, it's already bad enough that you've got to protect email, remote connections, you know, close every port, and opening up, I mean, port 80 alone is going to kill the small business network at some point.
Yeah, port 443 is getting pretty bad too.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's encrypted, and that's another show, but all this encrypted traffic that these smart appliances can't scan is an issue.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Well, we're over our hour as per usual. Anything else you've got in your notes there that will intrigue us from the last couple of weeks?
No. Nothing intriguing here. I got a bunch of scribbles, but I actually need to start crossing out things I've talked about. I'm going to throw this whole sheet away and start over.
Oh, I did have one other thing, since we're talking about SolarWinds. And by the way, I like SolarWinds. I use SolarWinds. So I did a thing over the weekend.
Uh-oh.
That I probably should have double-checked before I did it. I was doing mobile device management for a customer inside of SolarWinds, and they wanted a couple of extra things blocked. So I said, oh, I've heard about this other product that will do all of that. Why don't we switch over to that? And we can, you know, do all the blocking and control the apps and all that stuff. Because I knew that the SolarWinds platform didn't do all of those, you know, Apple-centric blocking of stuff. So I transferred 26 iPads over the weekend. And so I was having a conversation with a Mac guy. And we started talking about that. And he goes, oh, well, SolarWinds will do that. And I said, oops. So I went in and we looked, and literally, policy by policy, everything was pretty much the same. Now,
in the SolarWinds?
Yep. Now, the only difference is in SolarWinds, for some reason right now, and I need to ask them this before I trash their product, but I'm not asking them tonight, so the location tracking does not work. It does in the other product that I switched to, which is, I'll tell everybody, it's Miradore. M-I-R-A-D-O-R-E. And I cannot remember if it was something where somebody sent in an email to us asking about it, or if it was something I heard on another podcast. But Miradore has been on my computer here for a while. I've had a free account. And I was going to move the customer to their enterprise level account, which basically would, you know, you could do everything in remote, I mean, in mobile device management, if the customer is willing to enter into the deployment enrollment program with Apple. And they weren't. So that's when I dropped back down to the second level, and that's the level that literally is pretty much the same as the SolarWinds MDM.
Hmm.
Are you looking at it now? Did you?
Yeah. So I looked at Miradore a while back because I actually talked to them at CompTIA in Chicago. And they looked really good, and they've got a lot more features now than when I talked to them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the interface. I like the web portal, and actually the devices show up really nice in there, and you can actually tag the devices and all of that stuff, and it gives you, you know, a nice little table of the products, the software version, the user. It gives you when they were last reported, and you can, you know, and you can do the same thing in SolarWinds, where you can set up the policies so that if you have multiple groups, even within a business, where you can set up different policies for different devices. So that, you know, there really isn't too much difference there. The reason that we switched, because I didn't think I could block backing up of photos to the iCloud in SolarWinds. And so just a tip for all you youngsters out there, always check before you switch.
Wait, you want to block uploading folders photos to iCloud?
Yes. Because it's a medical office, and they do their, you know, their medical records program on the iPads, and they'll actually take pictures of patients and be able to upload them through the iPad. The problem is, and this is another change that I'm doing with this customer, but just not yet, they're using the same Apple ID on all the iPads. And so all the iPads are backing up to the cloud. So even though we've gone in and literally removed all the iCloud stuff, they end up putting it back on.
Hmm.
So step one is to block it. Step two is to get some more of the MDM features. And then step three would be where I'm going to have to go in one day and we're going to have to create an Apple ID for each and every user. And they're going to be responsible for managing and maintaining their own iPad.
That's a nightmare.
Yes.
So the thing I'd wanted most with Mirador was location tracking.
And that is the one thing that works in Mirador, not in SolarWinds. And I like, you can actually pull up a map and see where all the devices are. And you don't have to do anything. You don't have to load a map yourself. You don't have to give it an address. You just put in the devices, turn on location tracking, and go to the map, and it's there.
Yeah, that's what I want. Because I sometimes like to see where my techs are, because if I know they were going to this client's office and this client's office, sometimes I want to just look and see where they are, because the client's asking me, when are they going to be here? I can look and see if they're on the way. I just like to see where they are.
Yeah. And it's actually nice because you can actually, you know, tell it how often you want the mobile device to update its location. And I set mine for 15 minutes for this customer. But you can set it anywhere from a minute to 24 hours.
Hmm. Yeah, I had it on my phone to test. I think I still have it loaded on my phone. Remotely play alarm sound. And look, to be honest, this is something that businesses really need to think more and more about, because they always are concerned after the employee is left about what's on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
You've got selective wipe.
Yep.
On here. Does SolarWinds have selective wipe?
It's not selective. It's just wipe device.
Yeah, see, that's a problem, because a lot of the employers don't want to wipe everything, which for me, I would tell them, look, if you're going to put, and that's the whole warning you get when you do an Android phone, that the employer, you ever done an Android phone would have that big pop up, that scary message that says that you, so-and-so can wipe your phone and see your phone.
No.
On an Android, it's a scary message. And I always get people ask me, what does this mean? I'm like, well, this means we can wipe your phone if we want to. I'm like, oh, you can? I'm like, yeah, I can. I can do it on iOS too. It's just, you don't get this big scary message.
Yeah. That was the argument I had with this particular client, because a doctor wanted to have his mail on a personal phone. And I told him that you couldn't unless I put on this management software. But the management software meant that I could lock the device at any time. Now, the other thing I didn't like, and you still can't do it with Mirador on the lower plans, you can clear the passcode, but you can't reset it.
Oh, yeah, you can.
But it has to be a supervised device. It has to be in the Apple deployment enrollment program. I went all around with them on that.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be supervised in order to be able to reset the password. You can clear it and you can lock the device, but you can't change the passcode.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff you can do.
I would like to, because this says on the free plan, set passcode, reset passcode, clear passcode.
Yeah, I may say it, but if you go into...
That's not the fine print.
That's right. Because if you go into the dashboard where you have all the controls, all the settings, they're all listed there, but to the right of any of those commands, if you see an S with a circle, that's where it says requires that devices are supervised. And that means that they're a part of the Apple deployment program.
And what does that involve, getting in that Apple deployment program?
So I haven't looked into it fully, because the first thing when I went to go set it up, you have to create, you know, a corporate Apple ID.
I think I did that.
And sign up and do all of that. But then in order to do that, you have to certify that you're buying the Apple devices from Apple directly or through an Apple reseller that is a part of the deployment program. So it's not something where a customer can just run out to any retail store or on Amazon and get their iPad. And so I stopped at that point because the client did not want to say that they were going to buy their iPads directly from Apple or an authorized Apple reseller.
I didn't do that.
But I will say...
So you really need to do that, though, then, to have all the cool
features. Yeah. And so when I talked to the office manager after this weekend, and she realized, oh, we still can't do all that stuff, I said, no, you're going to have to go the full Bonte and, you know, sign up with Apple completely. And she goes, okay, I'll talk to the doctor.
And this does the Apple devices. What do you have to, what's the equivalent for the Android devices to manage those things?
I don't think there is an equivalent, because I think the Androids, you can manage. Actually, I haven't looked, because these were all iPads. So
nobody uses Android. I'm just curious if you ever.
Well, you know, this network has a show called Android App Addicts. There is, it's interesting. Let me find, of course, I can't find it now because we're on air. Well, we're not on air.
We're on something.
Yep.
So
here we go. Okay. Android. So it looks like Android. Oh, they only have a passcode feature. I don't see I don't see all the settings for Android devices that I do for iOS. I don't know. That's something to look up. I'll figure it out. Get back to you.
Yeah, I would like to look into this more, because I haven't deployed any of the mobile device management from SolarWinds. I looked at Mirador, and I'm glad you mentioned this, because the thing I want the most is location tracking.
Well, that's the thing. If you want location tracking, you will not be happy with the SolarWinds. So Mirador,
it just doesn't work. I mean, I'm saying they offer it, but it doesn't work.
I have a question into a development manager there. I don't have an official answer that I can say right now.
But it's listed at that. That's a feature.
It is listed as a feature.
Interesting.
And here's what I know that can be publicly said. It's on the roadmap.
If this is a feature, it should be there already.
Yeah. So they're working on it. It's on the roadmap.
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. What'd you see?
Oh no. Okay. I'm looking at my dashboard, and I see that under mobile devices, my phone is there. But I remember trying to do it, but since I had my device already registered with Mirador, I couldn't enroll it in another MDM. So if I would have to unregister it from Mirador be able to enroll it in the SolarWinds.
Right, you have to remove the management software from your device and unenroll it.
Yeah.
I will say this, the enrollment on Mirador was pretty quick compared to the enrollment in the SolarWinds. I mean, it took me probably 20 to 30 minutes per device on the SolarWinds. With Mirador, we're talking 10 minutes.
I remember mine being pretty quick.
So that aspect was pretty good. I like that.
All right. Well, I think more and more people are going to need to be doing this.
Yes.
Some kind of mobile device management. So.
All right. So let me make a note here. As I play with Mirador more, I'll give you updates there. If you do anything and figure it out. We got a lot of homework.
Yeah, maybe I'll enroll in this deployment program for Apple.
But here's the thing. Here's for the cost from a tech standpoint. Now, obviously, I mean, we're talking $1 per device for the business and $2 a device for the enterprise. That's not a lot of money for a lot of these features, especially if you're in the deployment program.
Yeah, so that's our cost, of course. Then you got to,
right,
you know, you got to charge the client more. So what do you charge a client? Do you charge them $4 a month? Do you charge them $3 a month? $5 a month?
Yeah. Well, you charge them the onboarding fee for setting it up, and then you manage it for, I think I told them for the enterprise, it was going to be $5 a month. Because to be honest, the work, I mean, if you've got a clear passcode, I mean, it's a couple minutes worth of work. And the other stuff that you would do, say you have to reassign a device to a user, well, that's a billable charge. That's not, you know, part of management.
Yeah.
Or would you include cool. that in your all-you-can-eat plan, which you don't offer?
No. You can eat all you want. You're just going to get paid. You have to pay for it.
That's right. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start to end off the show. One thing that I want to make sure I do is I want to give a shout out to the folks out in the Twitter land. We have been getting some new users on Twitter, and I have not been mentioning that at all. And we've had, I mean, I think I had 5 new users in the last week. So if you, yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, you can follow Podnuts Pro on the Twitter. We are at Podnuts Pro, and I will be sending out anytime a new show is released. I put a Twitter out there along with the one that comes out from the Podnuts door-to-door geek account. So I put that stuff on there. I will also do things like last week where I put out the photo of Mike Smith, Steve Cherubino, and myself as we were recording last week's podcast. We probably will do lots of other stuff in the future as we, you know, get some more regular stuff on here. But follow us on the Twitter at PodNutsPro. And of course, you can always support PodNuts by going to podnuts.com and doing a regular donation there on the website. Help out some of our Patreons through the website. And of course, folks, we've asked for Windows 10 tips. We're asking for Windows 10 configuration stuff. Send those in to PodNutsPro at podnuts.com. You can send an email directly to myself or Matt, just marvin@podnuts.com or matt@podnuts.com. We do want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. Matt, anything else you'd like to say before we end off?
Thanks for putting up with this for the past hour and a half.
This is the great thing about an unscripted show.
It's like just a nice conversation with friends.
Yes. And if you want to have a face-to-face conversation with friends, join us in Chicago for the IT Owners Conference that will be coming up this August. I know that I can't really tell you to go buy tickets because the event is sold out, but you can go over there and get on the waiting list because if anybody drops out or we find more seating at the venue, we'll be sure to get people to pay for those additional seats there. So both Matt and I will be there.
I am looking forward to it. I love Chicago too.
Beautiful, beautiful place.
Good time.
Yep.
A lot of A lot of good content.
And a delicious
going to be there.
And a delicious breakfast.
Food should be good. Food's always good in Chicago.
Food is great in Chicago. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to end off the show right now. Again, thank you for listening. And Matt, we'll see you. Well, we'll talk off the air about when we'll see you again. And for everyone out there listening, until next time, holla.